Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
And welcome back. You're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. Hey, if you want to drop us an email or just say hello, you can visit us online at www.steppinoutradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Also, we have our guests here from Emotions Anonymous. If you'd like to find out a little bit more about their fellowship, you can visit them online at www.emotionsanonymous.org. And next up, we have Missy. Missy, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for asking us
Absolutely.
To come on.
Absolutely. Missy, let me ask you, when did you, I had asked this question to Aaron a little bit earlier. When did you know that you weren't wired like other kids? When did you know that your experience with emotions or feelings were just a little bit different than the kids that were around you? How old were you?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was a very naive person,
okay.
child. And my mother had total control over me and over the way I was supposed to think. So I really didn't, I kind of guess I was aware of it, but I wasn't really aware of it till I got older and got out on my own, which wasn't until 35.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of knew something was wrong and wanted help.
Well, what sort of emotional distress do you wrestle with? Is it for Aaron, it happened to be anger. For you, is it something different?
I would say inferiority.
Okay, self-esteem.
And fear.
Fear.
And very, very low self-esteem.
Okay. And that goes back to when you were a little girl?
Yes.
Yeah. And your mom, I take it, wasn't, I mean, or maybe she was. I don't know. What was your relationship like with mom?
Well, see,
you said she was a bit controlling.
Yes, but this is where when I was a child, I thought she was God.
Okay.
And I thought she, you know, whatever she said went, and that, like, she was always right. She made me feel that she and everyone else was always right, and I was always wrong.
Mm.
Not that I was right all the time, nobody is, but I've deserve and feel that I was right
some
or a
time.
Lot
sure.
of the time.
Sure. And so your confidence really wasn't built up
from
your home life. So
no.
I imagine growing up, that was a little bit rough.
Yes, it was. I was sore. I feel like I was teased a lot, very much so, especially by my sister. And my mother would never side with me. She'd always side with my sister and tell me that she's just doing it because she gets a rise out of you.
Hmm.
Don't react. Now, I know that to be the truth, but even today, people can get rises out of me, and I know I'm not supposed to react, but there's something I feel like emotionally, like really, I'm not well emotionally, and they can get a rise out of me, even though, like, literally or figuratively, I know that that's not correct.
What kind of stuff did your sister used to do to you to get a rise out of you, and how did you react?
Well, she would chase me up and down the beach with a horseshoe crab, and
okay.
I would scream and yell and be scared because I was scared
okay.
of them, really. She would also spit on me.
Oh, that's horrible.
And, you know, she'd do other things the kids do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those were the two main ones that I remember. And then one time I remember sitting, my sister and I sitting on either side of the sideboard. And I believe it was probably because my sister was teasing me and, you know, getting a rise out of me. My mother was mad, didn't like it, so she punished both of us.
Mm.
She wouldn't just punish my sister or tell her to really stop. I mean, I guess she did a little bit, but she really never really meant it.
How old were you at this time?
I was small, I guess. Started in a... Well, could have started when I was younger, but I remember in my, like, 7, 8, up till I was in my 20s.
And this relationship stayed this way?
It did at times, and there were times, of course, when we got along very well, and I thought I was very close to my sister until I learned otherwise when I got older.
Huh. And going through high school, you felt like you didn't fit in?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't fit in, and my mother sent me to a very hard college preparatory school, and the teachers said, or the administrative, you know, they like you take little exams to get in and all, and they said that I really wasn't scholastically that, you know, that smart to
okay.
fit in there. But she insisted that I would go there because the family, the ancestors, had founded the school, and she said, that's where you're going.
Okay.
And I didn't fit in there, and I felt like I was at the bottom of the heap all
right.
the time, and all I wanted to do was get out of that place. And I would go, because I had to go, and
mm-hmm.
report to the classes and do that. Then I go stand by the window and wait for Mommy to come pick me up, and I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Really?
That's so correct.
Is that unbearable?
Yes, it was.
Wow. Wow. So did you become more isolated? Did you just stay away from people? I mean, how were your relationships with friends and stuff at this time?
I didn't have very many friends.
Okay.
I would be isolated, really, because I couldn't really... You know, I felt like so inferior.
Mm.
I just couldn't relate and connect.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And what other stuff did you wrestle with? I mean, I think we all as teenagers feel a little bit, you know, awkward and inadequate. I want to get a sense for what was really different for you, though. Your experience sounds like a bit more lonely, though, than your average teenager. I mean, it sounds like you were wrestling with a bit more stuff than most of the people were going through growing up at the time. Did you know that something wasn't right?
Well, I knew I didn't feel well, but I didn't have any idea at that time, and my mother would poo-hoo if I said I was depressed or I was having trouble with this or that. She'd poo-hoo that.
Okay.
And say that you're just crying a little bit. You're not depressed. Depression is really bad. You're not depressed.
Mm.
Don't say you're depressed.
And this is the first time you remember depressed or experiencing depression?
Depression, or I don't think I maybe thought it was real depression at the time, but just not feeling right, and I didn't really like life.
Okay.
I didn't like reality, as I call it. I still say nasty things about it sometimes myself now, so you can still... I still have emotional problems.
Okay.
And I do suffer from acute depression and anxiety. And I do take medication because I to deal so that I can be able to work the program. As Aaron said before, even if you take the medication, if you don't have a support system, you don't have people that care, you don't work the steps and the slogans and the program and reach out to people, you won't be able to cope that well even with the medication. Or
sure.
Some people do, and some people they can't. But sometimes you need a little bit of that medication to, like, put you on more of a little level, balance a little bit, so that you can then grasp and get into the program.
Well, let me bring you back towards high school, college, earlier years. When did you start noticing that, or when did you start pursuing help on a professional level? How old were you?
Oh, I was old. I was probably in my 30s.
In your 30s. So you basically...
Or late 20s.
Late 20s.
I think maybe the first time was 25, 26.
Okay.
And I did it for about a year and thought I was okay and then stopped.
Okay. But you spent the greater part of high school, college, your early 20s in depression or without any kind of treatment or help, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yes, you are hearing me.
What was that like for you during that period?
It wasn't very nice.
What was it? Were you functional?
Well, sort of. But
give me an idea of a day in the life at that time.
Well, I would get up in the morning. This was a school day. I hated school. You see, I really only liked one day of the week, and that was a Sunday afternoon when I could really go and do something I excelled in. And that was fun, but I had to wait all week for that one day that I liked. Otherwise, I'd have to get up, think about getting dressed, going to school, doing all that hard work. And then I would come home and have to work all night at homework, and then going to bed and repeating it all again.
So it was just this tedium that was just, yeah, unnerving. You were sharing with us a little bit before about what a day in the life was like, and you really spelled out your whole week as, you know, six bleak days, you know, with one day of something to look forward to. And, you know, in the break we were asking you, what was that one thing that you look forward to, and what was it?
Okay, it was called a sport called beagling.
Beagling, huh?
And what I usually explain it, because a lot of people, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people have heard of fox hunting.
Okay.
And we call it poor man's fox hunting because we use a beagle hound, which is smaller than the fox hound. And whereas the fox hounds go after the fox, the beagles go after a cottontail or a jackrabbit or European hare.
Okay.
And we do it on our feet instead of on the horses. But it's the same concept. It doesn't sound as intricate and involved as it really is. I mean, everybody thinks you just put the hounds out there and you chase the fox and you ride after them.
Mm.
But there's a little more scientific things involved than that, which I won't go into.
It was just something unique that I just wanted to share with the audience because I never heard of that before. So that's kind of cool. But let me ask you, what happened to you after school? Did you go into work? I mean, what became of you after graduation?
Oh, after graduation of high school, I went to a junior college.
Okay.
And luckily, they did have there. The only thing I really liked there was horseback riding.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I did do that and enjoy it. The same thing sort of happened there as at high school. I didn't really have much fun. I took a simple course to some people, which was home economics. But to me, it was very difficult. Because I, of course, went to a college preparatory school, and they studied all the academics, English. Well, not that you wouldn't study English in public school either, but, you know, we stressed that. Whereas in public school, if you did home economics, you would do a lot of those type of courses, like sewing and cooking. Well, when I went, I had no idea how to do anything.
Mm.
So I was in the same boat that I was in high school.
Were you still wrestling with the depression all throughout this? I mean,
yes, I was. I wasn't aware that it was depression, but yes, I was wrestling.
You had said earlier that you came to find some professional help, I guess, in your late 20s or early 30s.
Yes.
And you spent, the better part of your high school, college. Let me just ask you, did you go into the workforce after you graduated college, though?
I did. I worked at private schools as a nursery and kindergarten assistant the first year I was out of college, and then I went in to another school and stayed there for 15 years and watched it grow from a nursery, kindergarten, first grade, all the way up through high school. And at one time I said, well, I think the kids and I could run this for about 3 days without anybody else. Then we'd have trouble.
Now, was it difficult for you to show up? Was it difficult for you to do your job with this depression?
This is strange because when I did work at the school, I loved it.
You did?
And I got me away out of the house, away from my mother, so it was fine. And I'd stay there and just love it and did a really good job.
So you hit a period of some relief while you were there. That's great.
Yes.
That's great. When you came to seek professional help, what was the diagnosis that they had given you?
Well, you know, when just depression, I guess. I really don't remember really getting diagnosed until my second time around.
Okay.
Another psychiatrist and another therapist, and I stayed in. Now I've been in therapy since 1980.
Okay.
And I feel it's very important. But in the beginning, how I found EA is that I needed really a lot of help, a lot of talking, and sharing. And I didn't have enough money to go to the psychiatrist about two or three times a week, so I found EA.
How long ago was that?
That was in 1980.
You found EA in 1980?
Yes.
Wow. So you've been there for quite some time.
Yes, I have.
Have you seen the fellowship grow over the years?
Oh, yes, very much so.
How old a fellowship is EA?
It was started about 1971.
So it was at the time you were, you know, the first decade of
Yes. Now, when I say it started in 1971, it started out in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was not on the island until 1978.
On the island? You mean Long Island?
Long Island.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's fine. And let me ask you, so you've now have north of 20 years in the fellowship, I take it. You met quite a few people and have developed a pretty robust support group. You know, what's it like?
It's terrific.
Yeah?
And you're right. Practically all my friends are from the 12-step fellowships, EA and NA and AA. And
you mentioned AA and NA. Did you have a problem with drugs and alcohol as well?
Not drugs, but I had some problem with alcohol, yes.
Do you attend meetings for Alcoholics Anonymous as well?
Well, right now, I don't. Because it was really my emotions, which it mostly is with people, that drove me to drinking. And I felt so good when I did drink. It took away my low self-esteem. It gave me confidence. I felt high. I felt I could relief and I could enjoy life. And that's mainly why I want to drink. And I was lucky. I didn't take one drink and then go off the deep end and take 50. One is not enough and 50. No, wait. One is too many and 50 is not enough.
Yeah.
I didn't have quite that bad a problem, but it grew. So, and my attitudes and emotions, it wasn't doing what it was for me in the beginning. So I stopped and I found EA and I was very happy there. And then I went to some AA meetings also, and then I did a EA program in the DART program of
what's
prison.
What's a DART program?
A DART, Drug Alcohol Rehabilitation Treatment Program in the prison, and that really helped me, too, to stay sober, because I said, I can't go in here and tell them I'm fine, I never drank a drop, because, of course, they were all with the drug and alcohol, and we did emotions. I did mainly the emotions, used the traditions, not the traditions, they're about the same, but our slogans, our just for today's, our meditation, so they got the EA approach, but they could relate to the other as well.
Did you ever get a chance to stand up to your mother? Did you ever get a chance to confront her on this stuff in your recovery?
Well, I will say the recovery, I changed. She never changed, but I changed and changed my attitudes and would not allow her to get on my back as much and not be quite as affected by it.
Okay.
I'm not saying that it was perfect, but it got much better.
Okay.
And for a while when I was first in program, I stayed away from her totally.
Mm.
Because she was really bringing me down, not bringing me up. But I'm thankful that I had the program and I could change and get more assertive so that she wouldn't allow me I wouldn't allow her to roughshod over me as much.
What do you want to say to the folks out there who wrestle with depression and anxiety? What do you want to say to them tonight as you're here as a member of Emotions Anonymous?
I'd like to say if you all can find a meeting in your area, go.
And that
you
would
will
also
find relief. You will find support that you will never have found before.
And that was at www.emotionsanonymous.org would be a good
yes.
way to do that. Okay.
Yes.
A local phone book as well?
In some areas.
In some areas?
Mainly the metropolitan area.
Okay. And you've been there about 20-something years now. And,
yes.
And it's helping.
Oh, it's helping. I'm going to stay.
You're
going to
stay? You're going to stay forever?
But we don't say that. We say in program one day at a time. So I'm here for one day at a time.
You're going to stay forever one day at a time?
Yeah.
cool. Well, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experience with us. We really do appreciate it, Missy. You did great. Once again, if you want to connect with us here at the show, you could visit us online at www.steppingoutradio.com. If you'd like to connect with Emotions Anonymous, you could visit them at www.emotionsanonymous.org. You are listening to Stepping Out Radio. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out.